Before Shopify, were you wondering, where are my sales at? Now you're selling with Shopify, the global commerce platform supercharging your selling. You have no problem selling online, in person, on social media, and beyond. Gary, easy on the cha-ching.
Oh, sorry, but my Shopify sales are through the roof.
Start selling with Shopify today and discover how millions of businesses around the world use Shopify to ignite their selling. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen. Shopify.com/listen.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like wary of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
A bitch, hoe, feminazi, slag, all of the good words. Great. Thank you so much.
That could be our intro.
Thank you.
Bitch, hoe, slag.
You're listening to Feminists Don't Wear Pink, the podcast, based on the book Feminists Don't Wear Pink and Other Lies, a collection of writing by 52 women on what feminism means to them. I'm Scarlett Curtis. I'm a writer, activist, journalist, and very, very proud feminist. I'm also the curator of this book and the presenter of the podcast. During this series, I'm going to be talking to a few of the amazing contributors who've written our book to find out how they found their feminism and some of the lies that they've been told about what it means to be a woman. Today's episode is an interview with Jameela Jamil. Jameela began her career on T4 and went on to host the BBC official chart show on Radio 1. In 2018, she made the quite insane move to LA, and for the past 3 years, she's been starring in the NBC comedy The Good Place alongside Ted Danson and Kristen Bell. Last year, she founded I Weigh, an online viral campaign fighting against the toxic body image ideals that are thrown at women every day and encouraging women and men across the world to look beyond the surface and ask for more. She's been my best friend for the past 9 years and been saving my life and making me a better person almost every day of that. I'm happy and a tiny bit jealous that she's now kind of doing that for the whole world and not just me.
Hello, Jameela.
Hello.
It's very cool to be here with you. So are you a feminist?
I am a feminist, yeah.
Amazing. And when did you first realise you were a feminist?
I, like many people, thought feminist was a dirty word for much of my life, and I associated it with something very aggressive and ugly, clearly because I was poisoned by the patriarchy as to what a feminist is,
yeah.
Which is some sort of a terrorist, really, is how feminists were painted. And in my sort of mid-20s, I started to finally develop like a real community of women and started to speak up for women and started to take part in activism and realise that that was definitely a part of who I was, that I was a feminist, and actually a feminist just someone who cares about the equality of the genders.
Yeah, that's so interesting. So do you think you're standing up for people and activism came before actually realising what the term was and what
yes,
it all was.
Yes, absolutely.
That's so interesting.
And I realised that there was a very peaceful and loving way in which you could be a feminist and achieve so much within that.
Yeah.
And I've taken that on as like my approach towards feminism and all activism is, obviously activism can't always be loving because sometimes you have to make a noise and you have to create actual movement. My personal approach is most of the time, not always, as we've seen on my Twitter, but most of the time to try and use empathy for the opposition in order to find a way to communicate with them in a way that they will understand and try to put themselves in my shoes.
You actually, this is quite personal, but you did that for me in a really amazing way once when I found out someone I was very close with had sexually assaulted someone and called you kind of crying and was very upset and expecting you to, I guess, be angry or you know, talked to me about it, and you were just so kind and understanding and just told me to think about the whole picture, and it was amazing. It was really amazing.
Thank you.
It really got me through it.
But I'm obsessed with context. Yeah. I'm obsessed with context. It defines me, my obsession with context, and I think it has helped me come to terms with so many of the things that have happened in my life that have been bad. Like, I've overcome eating disorders, I've overcome abuse, I've overcome all kinds of trauma, physical, emotional, sexual. And the only way I've been able to come through that, not perfectly, but definitely to a point where I'm a relatively happy person most of the time, is via context, is being able to look at all of that. And I think that we lack that in this world. We lack context, and we lack an ability to look outside of ourselves or look outside of our Facebook algorithms, you know, and see the other side of the story. And I think that...
And I think that's also, I think so often arguments within feminism lack context. Like, you know, I mean, this week there's a lot of horrible things being said about women who wear burqas, and to me, you know, for a lot of women, that is feminism. And there isn't just this one way of doing feminism that fits everyone. It's not about wearing more clothes or wearing less clothes, or talking more or talking less, or working more or not working, or being a mum or not being a mum. It's about context and nuance and what it looks like for you to be an empowered woman.
For sure. But I also draw a line at sometimes finding that feminism could be some sort of, I'm going to explain this horrendously because it's off the top of my head, but it almost feels like an umbrella term under which we can operate however we like. And in an ideal situation, that is great, and that's how it should be. But sometimes you have women who can operate with toxicity, and they can push toxicity out into the world. And then if any of us are to criticize those women, then we are considered bad feminists for criticizing someone. Now, even if you're not attacking someone, you're just criticizing, you're offering constructive criticism, then you are still told off for you're reprimanded for questioning a woman's decisions.
Yeah.
But sometimes we have to realize that some of those women are, an expression that I use is a double agent for the patriarchy, which is someone who, whether they know it or not, are pushing the patriarchal narrative out to other women, and then they're profiting off of it. And they are therefore part of the patriarchy. Just because you have breasts and a vagina, or no breasts and a vagina, or no vagina, either way, as long as you identify as a woman, but you are pushing a patriarchal narrative, I don't believe you definitely get to hold the... I don't believe you deserve refuge under the feminist... umbrella.
No, I definitely don't.
I think you should be called out.
Yeah.
And not just shamed and reprimanded, but constructively criticized and offered, invited to come back to being on our side, which is pushing out helpful, nourishing, loving information to other women. When you're selling your, can I swear?
Yeah.
Fucking weight loss lollipops or like diarrhea tea or like shit my pants gummies, you're not just because you're a woman, it doesn't make you a feminist. You're a double agent. You're pushing a patriarchal narrative of like, we have to be thin and we have to have a flat tummy to be acceptable, which is for men, because we're only supposed to have flesh wherever men would like to see flesh and no flesh anywhere else. You're not a feminist. And someone should shine a light on you and say, this person is pushing out something bad and that person should stop, and we should see that that person is full of shit.
I completely agree.
So that's how I feel about it. I do get into trouble, but...
You're amazing. And I do think things definitely change when you are putting things out in the world and people are listening, because then no matter how, you know, I think it's fine saying we respect every woman's decisions and... I really do believe that in individual women. But I think if you are having an impression on 10, 100 millions of people, you do have some... I mean, do you think you have responsibility?
For sure. That's what this platform has to be used responsibly.
Yeah.
Because people are buying into you. And some of the people who irritate me the most are the celebrities who push out constantly toxic messaging and belittling and demeaning messaging for young women and are bad role models. And then they're like, well, I'm not telling anyone to be like me. It's like, well, the second you are selling any kind of brand, you are literally telling people to be like you.
Yeah,
the reason no one cares. Yeah, the reason no one cares about what the Rolling Stones did, like shooting, I don't know, like heroin into their eyeballs or whatever they did. I don't know what they did, but they did a lot of bad stuff, like naughty stuff, yeah, and lived like
really
chaotic.
Long time.
How? Are they embalmed?
It's insane.
Are they? The reason that no one really had that much of a go at them over the years is because they weren't selling anything. They weren't branding themselves. They weren't saying, hey, this is my clothing line. Hey, this is my soft drink. Dress like me, drink like me, eat lollipops like me, get your hair done like my hair is done. As soon as you are doing that,
you are saying,
literally, be like me.
Mm.
You don't get to pick and choose what people copy of yours. You have to be responsible.
And I think what's really powerful about you saying that is you've, you know, kind of been in the public eye for so long and really know how that feels. And, you know, I know you very well. You're not perfect.
Mm-mm.
But it's not. I think when people hear that, they think it's about being perfect. And it's so not.
No.
It's just about not hurting people.
But I also talk about having been abused, and I talk about having had a nervous breakdown and what I had to do to get out of that. I talk openly about EMDR therapy, which saved my life, which I found out about from you. You know, I'm someone who still struggles with depression and anxiety on and off. And, you know, but I also believe that sharing that imperfection is a part of being a good role model, because nobody is perfect. And I actually think it's really damaging. It's part of what I hate about social media is the constant, like, being constantly bombarded with the like highlight reel of people's lives. I actually don't think that's good. It makes someone then feel bad about themselves. Instagram just makes people feel, so much of the time, Instagram and Twitter can make people just feel poor, fat, lonely, unloved, like all of these different things. And I want to use it for something a bit better.
Yeah, once again, I would say, I think if you're following the people that have 100 million followers, then that is how Instagram can make you feel. I was very screwed as a child and grew up on social media. And I think it also can be this incredible place for activism and feminism.
Oh, for sure.
And that is what you're doing. So I want to talk to you about two things.
But before you do, that's also something that you've been doing for so long. And you are a big part of why I do it. And you were like 15 when you were talking about being a teenage granny.
Yeah.
And talking openly about depression and mental illness in a way that adults were responding to, because they didn't have anyone else to hear talk about that. So I just would like to say that to you on air and in your life, because I don't think I've ever properly said that to you, that you're such a big part of why you have made me feel braver about speaking out about these things. And you are one of the first safe spaces that I ever came across on social media. And it's encouraged me to make more of those.
That makes me want to cry.
But don't. Carry on. Be a professional. Man up, but I do Scarlett.
Also,
man up.
But I do think... So one of the things we try and talk about in there... I'm not as good as you at doing this.
No, you're really good.
One of the things we try and talk about in this book is that feminism can look like huge, amazing gestures that end up changing the law and, you know, affecting thousands and thousands of people, but it can also look like small gestures that just help one woman or yourself or your mum or anyone. And to me, you are the person in my life and in the world that is the best example of that, because you've kind of done both for me. So
let me cry.
Do you want to talk a bit about how we met, or should I?
You.
Okay. So I was a very, very sad and disabled 14-year-old who had an operation on my back that went wrong, and I was lived in chronic pain for 3 years and had dropped out of school, and all I did all day was watch TV and read magazines. And there was this very cool girl in the magazines who was wearing a SpongeBob SquarePants dress and was called Jamila Jamil, and I was very obsessed with her and thought she was amazing and not like anyone else on TV. And at kind of the peak of my sadness and illness and pain, my dad met this girl at a party, not wearing the SpongeBob dress. And my whole family was very kind of desperate, not knowing what to do with me or how to help me. And he ran up to her and was like, my daughter loves you. Please, can you just come over and be nice to her? Because she's going through a really, really, really bad time and none of us know what to do. And she's seen all of Grey's Anatomy now, so we're looking for extra things that she can do. And for some reason you said yes, because he could have, you know, murdered you, or I could have been super weird. And I, at that point, wasn't seeing any friends or seeing anyone, and you just came over and you lay on my bed and you talked to me like a human, which everyone had been so scared of what was going on with me for so long, and scared of the pain and the illness. And when a child is ill, it's terrifying. And you were the first person in months that talked to me like I was a real human. And you would bring me, and from then on, you started coming over most weeks, kind of, mm-hmm. and you'd bring me little presents, and like I could barely walk, and you'd bring me the tallest high heels in the whole world, and like bags that I was never going to use, and tiny little toys and dolls and sweets. And you would just sit on my bed and actually talk to me, and I felt like I actually had a friend, and it was incredible.
What was so funny about that time is that I sort of like, you know, I was what, 23, and I sort of arrogantly presumed that I would come in and just sort of save your life and, you know, bestow all these nuggets of wisdom upon you. And then you ended up saving mine back.
That's
and
I was
this like 23-year-old who was in the public eye that I hadn't ever planned on being in. And I definitely wasn't ready for, still not ready, and not good at it. But I was still struggling with my own anxiety and depression, didn't have anyone to talk to about it. And you became such a big lifeline to me,
so
which was a huge shock for my arrogant 23-year-old self, thinking I was coming in to save the day, and then you ended up saving mine. But that was, you've also had a really big impact on me in my life. And like I said, been a really big inspiration. And it's so fun to now find a way to work with you to then take that love that we have for each other and then push it out into the world.
Because I really feel what you did for me was like this tiny beta version of what you're now doing for the world, which is Ai Wei, which is incredible. So do you want to talk a bit about Ai Wei?
Ai Wei is just a, it's basically a movement. It's a big movement to change the narrative around the way that we talk about women's value, because it's been disgusting up until now. We've been so demeaned and diminished down to a number on a scale. And it, not only are we viewed by that by society, but we view ourselves like that now, which is so devastating and depressing. I didn't eat a meal between the age of 14 and 17. I was so anorexic. I didn't menstruate during that entire time. You know, I damaged my body for quite a long time, and I would still be completely anorexic to this day, I probably believe, because it's a really hard disease to ever get rid of or condition to get rid of. But I was hit by a car, and that just changed my, well, I broke my back, and it changed my relationship with my body for the better. But, you know, hopefully we don't all need to be hit by cars. We're not lucky enough to all be hit by a car.
Yeah.
And so in that,
that can
so,
be Ai Wei version 3.
Because I can't guarantee that all women with body issues will be hit by cars, I've decided to start Ai Wei to rebel against society's way of valuing and defining the worth of a woman. We shouldn't just be thinking about taking up less space. I actually really believe that our obsession with body image that has been forced upon us is slowing us down as a gender.
Yeah,
and
I completely
agree.
We're
not sleeping as much as men because we're getting up early to get ready. We're thinking about it all the time. When men are thinking about business, we're thinking about our bodies and how we're failing.
We have 75% less orgasms than men.
Do we?
Yeah. And that is like good for your brain and helps you feel better.
Well, that's true.
I mean, we spend all this time working out and doing Pilates.
And, absolutely. Yeah. And we spend all this money.
Yeah.
All this money. And there's all these like chemicals on us all the time. And we're just focusing on it. What? Why did anyone ever say, and I don't judge these people, but how amazing is it that it has come into our vocabulary, the sentence, oh my God, I must have a manicure. No. You're like if you want to, that's fine.
Yeah.
But must is ridiculous.
Need.
No, like I must eat a sandwich, sure. But I must have a manicure. Oh no, I'm ashamed of how my nails look. Men very rarely think about these things because they're thinking about growing their place in society and making it as big as possible. But we're trying to take up as little space as possible and just make sure that we land a guy.
Completely. Although I do also need a manicure. My nails look disgusting.
I'm going to make you do an Ai Wei page.
Yeah. I've done an Ai Wei page.
Oh, yeah,
amazing. So what do people do in Ai Wei?
So what people do is, the reason it started is I saw a picture of the Kardashians, and these are, you know, however I feel about them, however anyone feels about them, these are women who have built an empire together.
Yeah.
And there were all these numbers written across their bodies in this group shot, and I was like, oh, I bet that's how much money they're worth. I wonder how much money
it was way
worth.
Less than how much money they were.
I know. But my curiosity to find out how much money they're worth made me click on the picture. And then I opened it up and it was their weight. And it was a really largely followed Instagram account with predominantly young female followers saying, who do you think actually weighs the least? What do you weigh? How tall are you? And then just thousands of comments from girls being like, oh no, I'm the same height as her, but I weigh double and this, that, and the other. Just absolute bollocks. And I just thought, this is 2018. What is happening? Yeah. These are kids my age. And that was in the 90s that I felt that way at that age. Like, how have we not progressed? If anything, things are getting worse, because at least in the 90s, I had to really like go out of my way to find toxicity. Yeah. I would have to go out and buy the £4 magazine, or I would have to like find Thinspiration, like Thinspo accounts, which were hidden, like it was like the equivalent of the dark web, like hidden behind other things. Now it just pops up onto your phone, whether you're looking
and
for
it's
it
not,
or not.
It's masked as... reality TV or
for
healthy
sure, or
eating
body positivity.
Or, body positivity.
That incredibly important concept has now been turned into a marketing slogan for...
Which began... Body positivity, the way I came about body positivity is because it was a movement that began for people in wheelchairs and disabled bodies and kind of making sure that they had the right access to the same things that everyone else had. And that's something we both have experience with that's been... It was nothing to do with having slightly big thighs.
With having abs.
Yep. Abs and a slightly big bottom.
Yeah. Anyway, so I decided to post a picture of myself with no attempt to invite anyone else to do one back. I'm not that presumptuous. I just wrote, I weigh my lovely relationship, the fact that I'm financially independent and I am an abuse survivor. I am this, that, and the other. I wrote down how I think of myself, how I value myself, which has taken me fucking years to get to the point where that's what I see when I look in the mirror, rather than just flaws, a million flaws. And I genuinely feel that way about myself now. And so I posted that out, and then to my surprise, and to like, I was in awe of this, but thousands of women voluntarily sent back theirs. And it was just incredible story after incredible story with wonderful unedited pictures of women with like just letting themselves be seen as free and honest and pure and showing that they'd survived cancer, or they cure cancer, or they are a loving mother, or they have done this, that, and the other. Just hearing stuff about people's lives rather than just looking at their fucking face-tuned pictures.
Also, what I even love about it, like aesthetically, is that you're looking at this picture of them, but the picture is the words. Like, it's such a powerful thing to see, because it's not just someone writing and it's not just a picture. It's like all you've somehow co-opted the Instagram way of making pictures, and just it looks amazing.
What's really fun, and like now that people are really getting into it, people are sort of redoing their first one and sending new updated
ones. I might
ones.
Do another one.
I've just done an updated one as well, and it's they are writing so many new things about themselves that they've actually started to go away and think about it, like what defines me, that it almost fully covers up the picture. You can barely see their face because there's so much that they want to say about themselves. This is cool. We haven't really heard from women.
No.
And so it's growing, and it seems to be making people just feel good about themselves. It's the first time I've ever been a part of something that hasn't involved trolling, but so far no one is trolling. And you would think that, considering how vulnerable people are being and that these are people who are marginalized by society into groups that are often openly bullied, there would be some sort of trolling, but there isn't any. It's wonderful.
And I do think that scares some people off from getting involved with this online, but we don't get much trolling on Pink Protest ever. There are nice places. You can kind of make your own little pocket.
Yeah. And it's really exciting. It's really exciting to hear women fight back. It feels like it's not just women. Also, men are now doing I Weigh pages. Some young men have been coming out on the I Weigh forum because they find on the I Weigh Instagram, because they find that it's a safe space to talk about themselves, and they'll just be treated with love. Some people send me heartbreaking messages where they say that they can't, they really want to get, that it really helps them and they really want to get involved, but they can't think of a single nice thing to say about themselves because they're so sad about their body image. And then sometimes I will, without naming them, like post something about that, and then they will get thousands of messages of encouragement like under the post. Even though it isn't, they aren't named, they know it's for them because they can recognize the message, and it then encourages them to do it. So it just feels like, for now at least, it feels like an incredibly progressive moment that just happened to come around at the right time. I think maybe because we're so bombarded. We're at capacity of like shame.
Yeah.
And so I think that, like, I just sort of put a pin in it and everything
and
poured
it all
out.
Burst.
Yeah.
Something I've never actually asked you about, but it's very interesting, is obviously a lot of what you do is going against these expectations we have around women mm-hmm. and beauty standards and appearance. But you are also one of the most fashionable people I know, very glamorous, like, you know, do your makeup, do your hair, all of that. How do you see that fitting in with your feminism?
Well, firstly, thank you. Second of all, I always say this, that, like, I enjoy looking nice. I enjoy, like, putting on a bit of makeup. I find it quite artistic. I find putting clothes together quite artistic and fun. I have no problem with that. I have no problem if you enjoy doing those things. But I am certainly a multifaceted human being.
Yeah.
That is one part of me. It doesn't define me. And I think that's what's really important. And I try to make sure that that's what I project externally, as well as that my writing is a really big part of me, my radio is a really big part of me, podcasts, my TV show, comedy that I'm a part of. I make sure that I'm putting out that you can enjoy your looks, you can enjoy putting stuff on, you can enjoy having fun with your hair and makeup and your fashion, but don't let that become your entire top 10.
Yeah.
Put that in your top 10.
I love that. I love that. So your piece in the book is called Tell Him, and it's about talking to young boys about feminism.
I haven't actually seen it since I
what do you see as men's place in the feminist movement?
I think that the way things go historically is that however much the oppressed rise, however much noise the oppressed make, we will always need the oppressors to help us in changing the situation.
Yeah.
You know, we've had that with racial oppression, and we've certainly had that with female oppression, where we've had to rely on men to finally say, okay, fine, you can vote. Okay,
yeah.
Fine, you can work. Okay, fine, you can drive. And they also have the power to take that back away from us, as we've seen in some places in the Middle East where women were at some point able to drive, then they weren't allowed to, and now they've been allowed to drive again. You know,
I will say it's not always okay, fine. Like, often it's been incredible men and incredible white people for the civil rights movement that are fighting for it as well.
I didn't mean for it to sound so kind of...
No, but it's also that. It's also people going, oh, there's enough of you. We'll do this.
No, for sure. But it just meant that, like, men have to be able to give us... The oppressors have to at some point give a green light,
yeah.
whether they've been forced into it or whether they themselves feel passionate about that cause and care about justice. And so I think men have a huge part to play in feminism, and they should realise that this isn't a war, it's not a threat. It can only benefit the whole world if 50% of our population are being able to function at capacity.
Yeah, completely.
And really able to fulfil their potential. We can only have more great products, we can have more great writing, we can have more great comedy, we can have more great things in the world. Yeah.
Have less
hashtags.
Take
a load off. Yeah. And also, it's so much more fun when everyone gets along.
Yeah.
We learn so much. We have so many great conversations. My boyfriend... didn't used to hang out with a lot of girls because he'd not come across a lot of women that he had a lot in common with. And also, he hadn't had an opportunity much in his life to meet women who would show them their true self. And I've seen this a lot with my female friends, that they pretend to be very different versions of themselves around men, which
yeah.
I think is clearly a conditioning problem and something that you really should never feel the need to do, but I understand why you do.
And then I find when I hang out with those men, they're like, what are you?
Yeah.
None of the girls we hang out with are like you.
Exactly.
You're weird.
Yeah. I'm
the normal
crab
one.
From The Little Mermaid. Is
yeah.
this who you've been speaking
yeah.
to?
Yeah. That's how they feel.
I feel exactly the same way. And so many of my male friends who I'm friends with, I am their only female friend.
Yeah.
And my boyfriend and I are not only in a relationship, but we're also best friends. And via the fact that none of my friends want to have sex with him, I mean, they might, but they don't ever project that, for which I am grateful, because they hang around with him with no agenda and
yeah.
they don't need him to find them attractive. They are themselves around him. And I surround myself only with, like, really exceptional and funny and smart women, all just women who are better than me. I live by the expression that... if you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room.
Love that.
And I take that and to the extreme, where I just think if you're the funniest person, you're the best person,
yeah.
whatever. So via that, he's ended up hanging out with so many incredible women who are being themselves around him. One of my female friends said the sentence to him the other day, about a breakup she'd been through. I can't believe I bleached my asshole for him. Like, he'd never heard a woman say something like that before. Something so raw and funny and disgusting. And now he prefers the company of women. Like, he comes whenever I'm meeting up with like a bunch of women, he always wants to come and he really enjoys himself and not come like that, but yeah, he wants to join and he has a great time and he's so, and the conversations are so much more emotionally available and he feels so much more supported than he does with so many, like, especially group male situations. It benefits. We're nice.
We're so nice. We're fun.
Like, you don't know this, but we're also funny and we're smart, even if we don't always show that to you, because either we're not the smarter, funny women are not chosen to be given a platform.
Or they're not.
Or they are those things and they don't show it because they're afraid of intimidating or turning men off.
Yeah.
You know, for which you have a responsibility yourself to stop hiding. Stop hiding the light that is in you from other people, because it won't feel good and it will just end up with you feeling underestimated and depressed and not really ever knowing anyone.
Yeah, the place I'm in at the moment is, I'm not going to change. I'm just going to wait for the men to change.
Yeah. And eventually that does happen, eventually, and you do come across men who just look at you as a human being, and that's all this has to be. Eventually there will be no feminism, there will just be humanism.
That's
what I'm going for towards.
So the theme of the book is the lies that we've all been told about what it means to be a man or a woman or a feminist. What for you, what is one lie that you think we've been told about being a woman?
That you can't ask for more. We've been conditioned into thinking that we can't even ask. We've been conditioned into thinking we're so lucky to be in any room ever, anywhere, outside of our house or a dungeon or a gym. And so therefore we don't even know that we're allowed to ask for what we want and what we need. We don't even know. So much of the time we don't. I didn't know for 10 years of my career, and only recently have I started to say, excuse me, sir, please can I have some more? And more often than not, I get it. I didn't know. I probably would have had it all along if I just asked. If I just had the opinion and the attitude of a man where I thought, well, I deserve this. I'm working really hard. I should ask for this. It didn't occur to me to ask because I felt so lucky and afraid. At the same time, we have to stop feeling lucky and afraid. We have to realise our own value and at least ask.
Do you think maybe that's why women can be so rude in nail salons? Because it's the one place we feel...
Are they? I've never been into a nail salon.
You've never been to a nail salon?
No. Look at my hands.
Weird, eh? Yeah, they can be, and maybe it's because we feel we're meant to be there, so we finally speak up.
But also, I can imagine, but also, like, look at the way that women are when we're in a group. We're completely different.
Yeah.
And we're really raw, and we're really funny, and we're really feisty, and we're really
rude.
Just rude. Really disgusting.
So disgusting.
So disgusting. I've heard way more appalling things in a group of women than I have in a group of men, you know, and it's because we're so repressed.
Okay, well, final question. What is one bit of advice you'd give a young woman?
One bit of advice I would give a young woman is to make a list every single day, if you have to, especially when you're feeling down, of the things that define you, of the things that make you happy, of the things that you are proud of about yourself, and the goals that you have in life. And those goals are hopefully not aesthetic based goals, that you have big goals. I want you to think about the things that you're going to look back on and remember on your deathbed, and know that those things are not going to be your love handles.
Yeah.
I want you to really think about that. Remember that this is your life. We really do only get one of them. And it's so important to try to be aware, to try to be grateful, and to try to be proud of yourself.
There's also pages at the back of the book, so you can write it down there.
Oh, sure. There are pages at the back of it. That's such a good idea. Yeah. Also, thanks for including me in this brilliant book.
Yay.
I'm really excited. I hope people respond to it. They should.
You can't troll books. It's quite nice.
Yeah.
Doesn't work.
No.
You can't read your comments.
No.
Thanks so much for listening to this podcast. If you've enjoyed it, or even if you didn't, we'd love to hear from you. So make sure you subscribe and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Feminists Don't Wear Pink and Other Lies, published by Penguin Random House on the 4th of October 2018, is available to buy now via the link in the description of this episode. All of the royalties from each book sold go to the amazing UN organisation Girl Up, who is supporting girls across the world. For more information and to join our gang, please follow us on Instagram at feminists. Thank you so much to Audioboom for helping us get it out there, and to the wonderful pink feminists who've joined us as guests. If you enjoyed this episode, we have some really fun feminist events coming up with even more of our contributors, and we would love to have you. There's a link to our website where you can buy tickets in the description of this episode, and I cannot wait to see you there. I love you, I love that.
I love
okay.
You.
Okay,
I'm sorry,
yeah,
I'm
no,
so
no,
bad.
I have no idea. I black out during these situations.
But I was doing no your job.
I have an out-of-body experience. No, you're great. You're fucking great. Mm.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.